What's up, Claim a Stories family? For the next couple of episodes, we partner with our friends at Feast Portland to share stories about creatives and entrepreneurs in the food and beverage industry. The Claim a Stories Feast Portland edition comes to you from Portland, a city that's rooted in an expressive, creative, and unfiltered spirit. It's America's culinary epicenter, filled with food carts, award-winning restaurants, and easy access to the outdoors. Come see for yourself. Plan your visit today at travelportland.com. Learn more about Feast Portland at feastportland.com.
He's always been like, I want you to be self-sufficient. Moving to America, he's like, I don't want you to be depending on anybody. You're all girls, and like, I want you to like, if me and your mom aren't here to support you one day, like, we want you to be like, we got this. Which is pretty empowering, because I feel like in an Indian household, that's not usually the thing. It's kind of babying your daughters, and really feeling like you need to take care of them all the time. And so we kind of had like a really interesting upbringing. And at the same time, my mom didn't really have as much of an academic background. So she really waited tables. She worked at Shoney's. She worked at Golden Corral. We ate there all the time because of the employee discount. And it was great. We've gone back now as adults, and I don't know if we love it as much, but as kids, it was like, oh my God,
yeah.
So great. Yeah, it was like so all you options. Can eat.
This is Claim a Stories, a show about leading and emerging BIPOC creatives and how they're able to claim their dream careers.
Tell me where you want to go, where you want to be. I can help you claim a seat, get you on your feet.
I'm Bima, and on today's show, recorded live at Claim a Stories Feast Portland edition, we meet Farah Jasani, owner of One Stripe Chai. Born and raised in Georgia, Farah is a first-generation Indian-American in a family of entrepreneurs. Her dad owned an accounting firm, while her mother ran a cafe that her family owned. As she headed off to college, Farah was drawn to art history, but was deterred because of lack of representation in the art world. So instead, she decided to study accounting, following in her father's footsteps. But she learned pretty quickly that accounting wasn't for her and changed her major to business. After school, Farah moved to New York and pursued a career in commercial insurance. While in the city, she fell in love with coffee. So much so that after a two-hour conversation with a coffee shop owner, she made up her mind that she would open her own coffee shop. But there was one little hiccup. She didn't have any experience or any clue of where to start. After some research, Farah decided to move to Portland and learn about coffee. She trained as a barista and gained a new perspective about the coffee business. One day, after ordering a cup of chai at her favorite coffee shop, she was wildly disappointed in the quality. This experience caused her to pivot and start her own chai concentrate company, One Stripe. In building her chai business, she learned about the heritage and the history of India's relationship with chai. In our conversation ahead, Farah shares a story of her parents pushing her to become an entrepreneur.
Contrary to most Indian parents, I got very lucky in that my parents were very, one, they really pushed entrepreneurship a lot, which is really rare in an Indian household. You usually are kind of supposed to be a doctor or a lawyer, or it's like pretty much like those are the two main ones. But my parents got married when they were like 21. Mm-hmm. They had just finished college, and they moved here a week after they got married. They moved to Queens, Rego Park. 21, didn't have any family here. And also didn't know what they were going to do. They just kind of like roomed with friends. And they came here for a better life. Like, that's why they came here. They knew that if they lived in India, there wasn't much room for growth. Mm-hmm. They both came from poor to low middle class families. And I don't know, I guess my dad just like, He had a commerce background. That's what they call it in India. And that's kind of equivalent to a business degree. Okay. And he's the one who really kind of started doing the entrepreneur thing, kind of working as an accountant. Mm-hmm. In New York, he used to work as in the accounting department of Maza Mango Drinks, which is this Indian like drink company, which has an office in New York. And he learned how to drive on their box trucks because like the delivery drivers would like
that was his first drive.
That was his first driving experience. And that's how they learn things. And everyone would kind of like get their first job because somebody's sister's friend had worked at the shop and was like, oh, like they're hiring, like come on down. And everyone always lived with other people. Mm. Like you got to America, you lived with your sister and her family until you found an apartment. And sometimes you'd have like 10 people in a one bedroom apartment.
Wow.
And yeah,
wow.
That's how
10 people.
That's yeah. Actually, my husband's family, I think when he was really little, they had like more people than that. But that's just how you saved money. Mm. And that's how you kind of like took your first step. And that's how you supported each other.
Right.
But as my dad was working for other people, they moved down to Atlanta because of just more community. Mm-hmm. And he started working as an accountant for somebody. And he realized, he was like, I'm kind of good at this and I could like do this myself. And so I remember he started his own little office. He had like a handful of clients. And it was in the loft of our house. And he had this little makeshift office. Hmm. And I kind of watched him through the years go from outgrowing that office to moving to like the actual like formal dining room, which is now turned into his office, to like a 2-person office, to a 5-person, to like now he has a really big team and he's at a firm for like maybe like 20 years.
And wow.
And we always think about my dad being this entrepreneur, and he's always been like, I have 2 sisters.
Mm-hmm.
They're younger than me, they're twins, and my dad's dream is that we start a business together. That would never happen. Like it could, but like it wouldn't last. But yeah, so he's always been like, I want you to be self-sufficient. Moving to America, he's like, I don't want you to be depending on anybody. You're all girls, and like I want you to like, if me and your mom aren't here to support you one day, like we want you to be
take
like,
care of yourself.
We got this.
Mm.
Which is pretty empowering because I feel like in an Indian household, that's not usually the thing. It's you're kind of babying your daughters, and really feeling like you need to take care of them all the time. And so we kind of had like a really interesting upbringing. And at the same time, my mom, didn't really have as much of an academic background. So she really waited tables. She worked at Shoney's. She worked at Golden Corral. Mm-hmm. We ate there all the time because of the employee discount, and it was great. We've gone back now as adults, and I don't know if we love it as much, but as kids, it was like, oh my god,
yeah,
so great.
Yeah,
it was
I got
like,
so
all
many options.
Yes. And so she kind of did a lot of that until she finally ended up. I remember in middle school we bought, and this was a really interesting experience to see as a middle schooler, but we bought a cafe that my mom was working in, and it was a like a restaurant in an office building, a beautiful office building. And it was huge. I spent my summers there every day. It's how I learned how to use a cash register because I was the labor there. And and really watched my mom, who's more of a timid person. Her English isn't as good as my dad's. Just like thrive.
Mm.
Like she, I mean, it was her place. I learned so much from watching her, and she really, and that was kind of also like where I kind of got this little bit of a background in like food.
Okay.
Just watching how that restaurant ran.
Right.
And then 9/11 happened, and that was a weird thing because not only are we Indian, we're also Muslim. And we kind of watched that restaurant be kind of taken away from us. And it was kind of like a weird, like we really knew what was going on. And that was like a weird, kind of reality to see that, like, you could be really good at something, but that doesn't mean everyone's going to perceive you as
that way.
Happy, great way.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So you grow up in this environment where you have the support to be an entrepreneur,
yes.
which is interesting, because I'm curious to know if, like, you ever resisted it then.
Well, my dad's thing was, like, I want you to be an entrepreneur, so one day I want you to take over my accounting firm. and so the Jasani last name can, like, live on through this. I don't know. When I went to college, I honestly, like you mentioned before, I had never seen anyone do anything but these other jobs. Yeah. And so I really, in college, I was really interested in art history. Like, I was super into, I thrived in all my art history classes. I loved that. But I had never seen an Indian person who was a museum curator. Like, I didn't even know if there were other jobs out there. Like,
yeah.
What do you do? and my parents would have totally supported that, but I myself was like,
I don't know that this actually exists. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you go down this path and you're like, if it didn't work out, you're like, that's a lot of years.
Exactly. And also, it's like, nobody that looks like me fills these spaces. So maybe maybe it's already been established that I'm probably not going to be good at this, or maybe I just don't have the background.
Wow.
So when I started college, I was studying accounting. Which very quickly I was like, whoa, this sucks, and I'm not good
not
at
doing
it
this.
At all. I'm not good at it at all. Sorry, Dad, I'm really bad at it. But then I was like, I guess I'll do something in business, because that's something that's like, you know, I kind of know where I'll
you
go
know,
with that.
Yeah, you've been around it for quite
yeah.
some time.
So I studied business in school and then kind of went into like a very kind of like a corporate path.
Yeah.
What
did you think about it? Like, did you enjoy it?
My first job was in New York. I was a commercial underwriter at a commercial insurance company.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought that was really cool, because
yeah.
I was like, I'm getting paid a lot.
That's so serious. Like a serious, like.
Yeah, and I was like, and I get to be in New York. This is awesome. And then I was like, after a year, I was like, I got to get out of this. This is kind of boring. And like, also, like, fake it till you make it. Like, a lot of it was like, I can't get passionate about this. I just can't. I don't know. And then I kind of went into, I also once again felt like I was like, well, how do you get out of this?
Yeah.
Like, because you're often like, I don't have all the experience that I need to do, like, what I think might be the dream job. And I went into consulting, but once again, consulting and all my clients were insurance companies. And that was really cool, because I got to travel a lot. I got to travel internationally and got to live the consulting life. But within like 2 years there, I felt like I was so overworked. I was traveling so much. And I just had this day where I was like, you know, I don't mind being super stressed out, but if I'm going to be really stressed out, I really want it to be something that I care a lot about. Like, how cool would that be?
Would that be, right?
And that was kind of where I was like, you know, I can kind of do anything I want to do. Like, so, like, maybe I need to find what I need to do.
So, at what point did you think, I'm going to go into the chai business?
Like, 20-year-old me would be like, what? You're sitting in, like, you're on the stage talking about chai. That's, like, so random. I was in New York, and I got really into specialty coffee. This was when, like, Stumptown was becoming really popular, and everyone was kind of like, Starbucks is cool, but
have you heard about this third wave?
Exactly. And that was, like, the buzzword, right? And so when I was in New York, I was on a consulting project where I didn't have to travel. And if you've ever lived in New York City, your home is most likely, like, the size of a closet. So, like, working from home was, like, very difficult. And so I would just, like, coffee shop hop all week.
Really?
Just
jazzed up on caffeine?
Yeah. Yes. Everywhere. And I just really fell in love with coffee culture. The whole idea of coffee shops bringing people together. Like, how many coffee shops out there have, like, you've been sitting next to somebody and, like, they're on their first date, or, like, they're on a job interview, or they just, you know, found this, like, figured out this equation to, like, something that's going to change the world.
Right.
And I was just like, this is so fascinating. And then also I was really interested in the supply chain of coffee, because why was my almond milk latte $8? But like Folgers is like kind of the same thing, mm-hmm. but it's like not that expensive.
No, way cheaper.
Like what does craft mean? Mm. What does specialty mean? What are they actually doing behind the bar?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a moment in time I was really, really into coffee, and I met a coffee shop owner in Atlanta who had just opened up this really beautiful coffee bar and boutique. And I was there for 2 hours talking to her. And I was just like, oh my God, you're amazing. And then I looked up on Instagram and I was like, she's like a year older than me. Like, what? Like, I could do this. And I told my sister that day, I was like, what if I quit my job and opened up a coffee shop or opened up a coffee roastery? Yeah.
And she said, you're crazy?
She was like, yes. And then I told my dad that night.
Oh, boy.
That was interesting. I was a little nervous to tell him.
Mm.
And he was like, yeah, that's great. Totally support that. But you've never worked a service job in your life. You've never waited tables. Like, you've never done any of this. So it's, mm-hmm. you know, just like...
A little different.
Yeah. Like, it might seem really, like, amazing, but it's going to be a lot of hard work. So, like, make sure... they've done it. So yeah. They knew. But he was super like, why don't you barista? Like, why don't you learn?
And then see what you think about
it. Yeah. So I kind of sat on that a little bit. It's really hard to quit your job when you have a pretty good job.
I mean, you know, I did that over pandemic and, you know, it's like, what are you doing?
It's hard. Yeah. And every like, you know, you're like, oh, just one more paycheck and like, and then I'll be good. And
yeah.
And I, 3 months later, I quit. Like, I was just so, like, on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it a point to tell myself that if you quit your job, you can't start looking for another job.
Mm.
You have to spend, like, a little bit of time to figure out if there's anything else out there.
When we come back, Farah learns more about chai and more about herself. For this week's Community Stories feature, presented by 99 Designs by Vistaprint, let's hear from Kai Norte, owner of Kube Ice Cream, a plant-based ice cream brand and manufacturer based in Oakland, California. Passionate about offering consumers a healthier ice cream, Kai shares a story about creating a special design for merch and the importance of restorative economics and food justice.
I come from a background in biotech, so I studied cancer cells and food systems that cause cancer in people. I also have worked in social work, youth development programs, and juvenile justice rehabilitative programs like National Youth Courts, Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, Alameda County Probation, Glide Teen Center, and really connecting teenagers in trouble with the law with other community resources for rehabilitative programming and support, and also workforce development programs. So Kube is a Black woman-owned, vegan, artisanal coconut ice cream manufacturing company and brand that is also a social enterprise because we are addressing the most critical issues of our time. We're talking about restorative economics and food justice, racial and gender equity and ecology, and saying, look, we are going to produce our own coconut cream here locally in Oakland, California, and not rely on synthetic chemicals and processed coconut cream overseas from other countries. And so we're deciding to be a manufacturer and produce our own cold-pressed organic coconut cream from mature coconuts. It's really about building the inclusive and regenerative economy with vegan ice cream manufacturing. And so when I'm talking about our triple bottom line, it's restorative economics. And that looks like hiring returning citizens, giving people second chances at higher wages, and also mothers returning to the workforce, and young folks who have been, or younger adults who have been emancipated from the foster care system. And we're saying that we want to repair the harm that has been done by the food system. We're talking about creating a regenerative, healthier food system.
Like many small businesses, Kube faced a few challenges due to COVID-19, but also discovered new business opportunities.
During the pandemic, our demand soared. I mean, it was just super challenging to supply the demand for Kube, but we did it. We had to focus on direct-to-consumer, so we sold online, e-commerce. And, you know, we had a really large fan base, so once we sold online, our demand far exceeded our capacity to supply, and so we sold out fast. People were happy to come pick up Kube, and people are still picking up Kube. Revenue went down a little bit during the pandemic because we weren't able to sell to tech companies and different corporate events, but we had a spike in revenue in another direction, direct to consumer. So at Kube, we're really looking forward to our new manufacturing facility with our own scoop shop in the summer of 2022. We're super excited to build community around real plant-based ice cream connected to fun dance classes and fitness activities in the space. So this is going to be a really beautiful and engaging space to really build relationships with our customers. And people want to feel the energy and the vibe and the brand of Kube. And so it feels good to really be redefining what the future looks like and creating healthier, more progressive jobs for people. I got to go through all the designs. I got to write out what I wanted, what I was looking for. I think we had about 60 designs to choose from, and we were looking for a design to go with the logo for a t-shirt, for a black t-shirt coming out next summer. We ended up choosing one designer who really stood out to me. I was really excited because, well, the design just beautifully reflected the brand of Kube, and it just looks really magical. And there are these palm leaves that surround the coconut, which is like resembling the tree of life. It's a very unique, magical design that I couldn't really find from some of the other designers, but they were all the designers created something creative and unique, but this one just really stood out. I had a really fun and beautiful experience.
That was Kai Norte, owner of Kube Ice Cream, a plant-based ice cream brand and manufacturer based in Oakland, California. Learn more about 99 Days of Design, a 99 Designs by Vistaprint initiative at 99designs.com/99days of design. Hey, it's Bhima. Welcome back to Glamis Stories. Pursuing her passion for coffee, Farah decides to take the leap and move to Portland.
It's 2015. Portland was becoming really cool.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was talking about Portland. And
the audience is like, we've been cool.
And a lot of people had told me, they're like, you should go to Portland. You'd really like it. And I was like, well, why not? Like, I have some time. Let me like spend a weekend in Portland. So I looked up, you know, things to do in Portland. And I was like, this place looks so cool. I got to spend more like a weekend
more time. Yeah.
Stuff. So I decided to spend the summer there, and also realizing that it's so big in coffee. Mm. It was such a great, I was like, nobody's going to hire me because like, you have to like be good at coffee to work in Portland. I was like, I'll just knock on doors and get like, you know, just work for free. I just like, what happens? I don't know how to use an espresso machine. Like, someone teach me. And I mean, Google led me here because I found Tabor Space, which is a community coffee. They have a community coffee shop, and they used to do, and I don't know if they do anymore, but they did like a barista training program. Mm-hmm. You'd volunteer your hours, and that's really where, like, that summer I learned about coffee and like what goes into it. And by the end of it, I was like, oh my God, I should be paying more for my coffee. Like, there's so much work that goes into it. And that's like before, you know, the beans even get, like, after the beans get here.
Get
I'm not
it.
Even talking about before that. Right. So yeah, that's how I got to Portland.
That's how you got to Portland. And so you got to Portland, but you didn't, in your business isn't coffee.
Exactly.
So how do you go from coffee to chai?
So I had never used to order chai at coffee shops because, and this is the Indian in me, I'm not going to pay $6 for something that I can make at home. probably better. Because the only chai I'd really had, like, out before that was when I was in college, I would drink Starbucks Oprah chai, like specifically that one. And I really loved it, but I didn't love it because it tasted like chai. I just loved it because, like, who doesn't love cinnamon milky, like,
yeah,
goodness.
Right.
And so that was a drink that I really loved. But so when I got to Portland, I, you know, I was learning about coffee, I was learning about roasting. And I remember going, I will never forget this day. It was like a defining moment, but I remember going to this very well-known coffee shop, and like that day I didn't feel like drinking coffee. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to order chai because I know that this company cares so much about their coffee. They must be putting the same amount of
effort into the chai.
Like, their chai must be spectacular. And I ordered it, and like the whole, I can like play the whole thing back in my mind, but I ordered it, the barista put it down in front of me, and before I could pick it up, he picked up a shaker of, I don't know if it was cinnamon or nutmeg, and just doused the entire thing. And I was like, wait.
What are you doing?
Yeah, like, what? Like, what is that? And so I sat down, and I took a sip, and I was like, oh, that's because this tastes like nothing. Like, it just doesn't taste like anything.
So he's trying to add something.
Yeah, I was like, okay. And that's when the wheel started spinning, and I was like, well, one, it was a lot of like a little bit of anger and disappointment and feeling like, well, why is this the case?
Right.
In a place like Portland, right?
Yeah. Where you like, you come, you see like everything else has so much intention. You're like, why doesn't my chai?
Yeah. Like, I was like, I don't want this drink that means so much to so many people. And, like, I can get really passionate about chai and the history of chai, but it just means so much that how can it just be a line item on a menu? And I don't want it to be that. And so that's where I kind of had this realization of, like, wait, maybe there's a different problem to solve here.
And so this is this also 2015 or is this 2016?
Yeah, this is, like, this is 2015 while I was here. And then just to, like, a little bit more background, coffee shops, chai is traditionally made on a stove.
Okay.
And you brew your tea with your milk and the water, and milk is like cooked with the drink,
okay,
right? And the reason why coffee shops aren't able to get that same exact flavor is because coffee shops don't typically have stovetops, right? So they don't really have the means. All you really have is an espresso machine with that steam wand.
Right.
And I learned this because I was working in a coffee shop.
You were working
in
one, so, like, you knew.
Yeah, like, if we want to flip drinks and we have so many people and you don't want them to have to wait, you need to use a concentrate or a powder mix to kind of help you get there. And so then my question was, okay, well, why are there not better concentrates out there? Like, can we have, like, a product that, one, has, like, I mean, I could, like, look at it and be like, well, they're using the wrong type of tea. Like, I could tell you that because the tea that I see is not the same tea that I see in my mom's cupboard. And can we use, like, better ingredients? Can we really layer flavor to figure out? Can somebody sit down and drink this and be like, oh, I taste tea, I taste spices. Like, I'm tasting all of these
different things. Yeah. It's great when you really are passionate about it. So you make this pivot. And you start your own chai concentrate business. And I think while you were starting One Stripe Chai, right, you said you started to learn a lot about your past and your family history and, like, how chai has impacted your own community. Can you share a little bit about some of those things you discovered?
Yeah. I think that for me, in my life, like, identity has been a really kind of played a big role in trying to figure out, like, who I am and where I fit in. And whether that's the context of being an Indian Muslim woman or being, you know, a first generation Indian American. And so selfishly, owning a chai company has allowed me to learn a lot about just kind of like my background. I think one misconception that people have about chai is that, and like rightfully so, understandably so, is that chai is this, like, ancient Indian drink. It's not. I mean, the British literally brought tea, like, cultivation to India in, like, the late 1800s. Chai in its, like recreational drink form has really only been around, like, since, like, the early 1900s. Like, that's not a very old drink.
Yeah.
and I think that... because it's a drink that came along with the colonization of India, it's really impactful. India in its like current form has only been around for like 70 years, right? Mm-hmm. So the country is pretty new.
Yeah.
But you suddenly had nobody drinking chai in a country to like a billion people drinking it every day. So I would say like the British are one heck of marketers. and I find that so interesting because the story is that China had this monopoly on tea, and they controlled all the prices, and the British really loved tea, but they couldn't control, they had to pay whatever the Chinese wanted.
Of course.
So I think that they realized tea grows wild in parts of Northeast India, and I think somebody noticed that. and I'm not saying tea leaves were never used, they're probably used more for like medicinal reasons, but somebody noticed that and said, hey, like this like climate works for tea.
For tea.
And so I read a bunch of stuff on this, but I think like China had like you couldn't enter mainland China, you could just kind of like trade at the ports. And the British had like sent somebody to like infiltrate and go in there and steal some tea plants, and they planted some in different parts of India, mainly the Northeast, and which is where Assam is, and kind of built these like tea plantations. And not only did they do that, and that was so we can now get like cheap tea, but I think a part of it was like we have all these laborers that are essentially free, like they like we colonize them, and so let's get them to, you know, make this stuff for us. And and I think what people don't realize, and this is a lot from us going on sourcing trips, realizing that, you know, there was a lot of displacement of very poor people from other regions to come out to these tea growing regions. And that has had a huge lasting impact on like on India in general. So I think that learning that is very interesting. And I think when I was looking around at like the chai industry as a niche at that time in 2015, I was like, well, nobody doing this looks like me. Like nobody like, do they know what they're selling? Like, do they know the story behind it? And for me, like, I think what's really cool about my job is that, one, I get to talk about chai every day. I have such a personal experience with it. But I'm getting to talk about and share my experience, not my interpretation of somebody else's experience, which is really powerful because at the end of the day, like, whether, you know, money or whatever else is successful or not, like, I get to talk about something I really care about and really share share something that, like, I feel like I know in a really personal way.
Yeah, no, I think it's really special to be able to be that close to something that you get to work on every day.
Yeah.
And I think it's also really interesting to learn that history from it. Because to your point, there's a lot of things that get made every day that no one has any idea what that story is. And in my opinion, the best products are the ones where you know the story, you know the person that made it, or you know, you know, kind of how it came to be.
Exactly.
Right. Thinking about like this journey you've been on, right? And you know, I want to talk to you for like hours, but you know, as you think thus far, like you've been extremely resourceful. You've been in the weeds and really getting into the details of things for, you know, someone else coming up, you know, maybe a young Indian woman or just another entrepreneur. What advice do you have for them as they think about maybe they might want to create their own beverage business?
Yeah. I think that I want to sit here and say, like, if you have an idea, go for it. Like, I think there's so much more to it than that. I'm, like, not a huge risk taker, ironically, not, like, a huge risk taker. So I'm, like, very, like, calculated risks. But I think if I was talking to somebody that was young and was Indian, and I think that from when I was doing this or when I was growing up, there are so many role models now. Like, there are so many people out there to, like, if you're trying to convince your parents, like, hey, like, I want to, like, own a beauty brand, like, there's plenty of South Asian women who have just killed it. And, and so, like, use that and, like, you know, use that to your advantage. to really paint this picture of, I think when our parents came here, they came here with nothing, right?
Yeah,
literally nothing.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit of debt, and like that's about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think for them, raising us in general, there was this whole idea of like, we worked so hard to get you here, and we just don't want to be taken away from you. And so really, we just want you to like only be in these industries where like we know you're like you're good to go.
You're gonna win. You're gonna be successful.
Exactly. And so it's not really because they're like, I don't want you to be happy, but it's really about like we want you to be like really successful and mm-hmm. be and not have to worry about things and not work as hard as we did.
Yep.
And I think now like there's so many conversations to be had to say, hey, like we can kind of balance both. Like you kind of actually brought us farther than you know you thought you would.
Yeah.
And like we can kind of do both. And I think that's really cool. And I think being open to like embracing that and having conversations around that is really helpful.
That was Farah Jasani, owner of One Stripe Chai. Find out more about Farah and get access to all of our episodes at Amazon Music. The Claim of Stories Feast Portland edition comes to you from Portland, the kind of place where new ideas are welcome and you can truly be yourself. A creative city that's committed to being a more vibrant, progressive, and inclusive place than ever. Come see for yourself. Plan your visit today at travelportland.com. Special thanks to Feast Portland and Oregon Contemporary for hosting this live podcast series. If you'd like to connect with us, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Claim of Stories. Our show this week is produced by BJ Fregoso, original music, production, and scoring by Adrian Anaya, and vocals provided by Priscilla. And special thanks also to VDOT, Professor H, Jordan Dinwiddie, Nick Pop, Lily Lynn, Nicole Early, Becky Mathai, and Amin L. Falele. I'm Bima, and you've been listening to Claim Us Stories.